Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. The Assassin's Song is the latest novel from the distinguished writer M.G. Vasanji. It's already a bestseller and has already been longlisted for the prestigious Giller Prize, which my guest has already won too, the first author to have been so honored. The two Giller winners were The Book of Secrets and The In-Between World of Vikram Lal. Published by Doubleday, the book, which retails for $34.95, is a portrait of a man caught between ancient loyalties and modern desires, between legacy and discovery. The story asks two central questions. If we determine our own destiny, what's the price of this freedom? And do we always end up where we really belong? It's quite a remarkable book, and I am very pleased to welcome M.G. Vasanji to the Plant on the Line program. Good morning, Mr. Vasanji.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Carson Dargwala, he's the story's central character. He's an immigrant to Canada. He escapes his father and his family, who are religious. Carson is not religious, correct?
Not in the conventional sense. The religion that he escapes from is more like a mystical tradition, a devotional tradition that he escapes from, and it is not really a dramatic escape, except initially a moving away from responsibility as kind of lord of the shrine, and then slowly he becomes a secular person. The rebellion is against the father and the burden that was placed upon him.
Nur Fazal is another of the story's central characters. He is a 13th century Sufi mystic. He's a character of fiction, is he?
Yeah.
And how do the two converge? How do Carson and how do they converge in this book?
Well, Carson is a lord designate of the shrine where the Sufi is buried, or was buried. So, the Sufi came out of somewhere around in the 13th century, lived in this area, collected followers, and he died there. And then the shrine arose where he died. This is a very common occurrence in some parts of India. And in fact, I happen to have visited at least three such shrines where a holy man, a Muslim holy man, had been buried, and the shrine sort of had arisen over the grave. And people come and worship there, and not only Muslims, but in fact, the majority are people of other denominations. And that's how Carson is connected, because his family has looked after the shrine for reportedly 7 centuries.
And without getting into to very much detail about the book, because people ought to read the book, one reviewer compared Carson to Christ. How do you react to a comparison like that, and do you think it's apt?
Well, obviously, it is. If you look at one aspect of Christ and one aspect of Carson, then there's a comparison there. I mean, Christ could be compared to anybody in that sense, if you pick one strand from his life. But so I'm not sure in what sense the comparison was meant. But basically, you know, I didn't see it that way. Let me put it that way. He didn't make a sacrifice. There was no God bearing down upon him to save the world. It was just a simple village situation where he was supposed to take over the lordship of the shrine.
The reviewer, I guess, he had said that he was comparing it to The Last Temptation of Christ in that book, where Christ was challenging his faith.
So I suppose in that sense there is a comparison. He was challenging the faith, but the sensibility, of course, doesn't go away. The Christ life, we don't really know too many details, except schematic, thematic details, whereas here I have built a character who is more or less complete. We know what he thinks, how he thinks, how he was brought up, and what he's rebelling against.
How do you react, though, to reviews of the book who may not understand what you're going for, or readers
are not to be too affected by the reviews. You know, they can be good or bad, it sort of affects your writing, at least mine. I get bothered by them and then start thinking about them. I think all authors, it's inevitable that this will happen. So I don't, of course it's good to know that the review has been good or very good, and somehow that filters down to me. But I have not read a complete review of this book. I've read bits and pieces of what people told me about very good reviews.
And when people come up to you and say, well, I like this character, I didn't like this character, does that, when you think about all the work that you put in crafting the book, crafting the story, how do you feel when people have their conceptions of the book, misconceptions, or?
Well, the way I look at it is that people take away from a book what they can, you know, what their inclination allows them to take. So, you know, some reading can be completely, you know, if it's done in a vindictive manner, like if some reviewer decides to look at your characters or your plot or your story in a very negative way and deliberately misunderstands it so he can bring it down, then of course one tries not to find out about it, but once in a while you do find out about it, and it does bother a lot. But otherwise, the people, we all take away from books what we are inclined to take, you know, what our inclination, you know, allows us to do. So it doesn't bother me. You know, I respect the reader as long as they've read the book carefully and try to enjoy it.
Carson leaves India. He goes to Harvard to study engineering, does he?
No, he goes to study just liberal arts.
And it's obviously a departure from his family and their life. He eventually finds his way to British Columbia, to Burnaby, does he?
Yeah.
And how does the setting, how did you come to that? Because we're talking to you.
I came to Burnaby because my in-laws live there, so I've several summers I've visited there, and I really enjoy that part of British Columbia, you know, the diversity, you know, Kingsway. I get a thrill out of it. I come to Burnaby just so that I can drive up and down Kingsway and visit restaurants and so on. So for me, it was... I wanted to pick another part of Canada besides Toronto and a small university. And I thought Burnaby seemed like a good idea. It was a place that I thought I knew.
Do you see yourself in any of the characters in any of the books that you've written?
Well, I see them in all the books. Parts of me are there, you know, when they're asking questions or, you know, their experience of life. You know, I mean, there in Vikram Lal, a bit of me is there in this one. Although I've given him liberal arts, and whereas I was in science, and I did participate in anti-war movements, whereas this person doesn't. But, you know, so there are differences, but at a very deep level, I think there are very strong similarities in what you would call the worldview of the character. So his disappointment with things, what I would say were my disappointment. And he's breaking away at the same time, not quite breaking away, because he does find outlets for things that he had absorbed as a child. You know, the mysticism gets directed towards poetry, for example, or music. That's the kind of thing that I personally am interested in, and perhaps that's the kind of thing that drove me to writing, to literature.
And people that know you, know of you, you were a nuclear physicist, were you?
Yeah.
And the move to fiction writing or to writing is seen as perhaps not an orthodox move.
Yeah, but it was not really a move as much as just doing two things, you know, together, one hour, you know, like during a day as a physicist, I would stop and start writing stories. So it was not a move until about when my first novel came out and my story collection was written. And that's when I decided as a career change to decide that I would devote the rest of my life not to trying to straddle two very different fields, but just write, which I thought was the closest thing to me, something that I had to do.
You were born in Kenya, raised in Tanzania. You're of Indian descent. You live now in Canada. You live in Toronto, do you?
Yeah.
You visit Africa and India often. This question in the book that you discuss about one of the themes is, do we always end up where we really belong? Where is home for you, and is that where you belong, do you think?
Well, I think the way I see it is, it can change from time to time, for one thing. You know, if you ask me next year or in the summer, it might be different. But I see parts of me very strongly attached to Africa, parts of me very strongly attached to India, which I visited in 1993, so it does come as a big surprise. It came as a surprise to me. In fact, it came as a shock to me that there was so much of the Indian in me. And then, of course, I identify with Canada. That's where my strongest leadership is. That's where my home is, where I brought up two children, and I made some contributions here. Plus, I've received a tremendous generosity and embrace here, as much as I've received in India. So, you know, these are things that don't go away. It's not either or. And the United States had a special place for me before, because that's where I thought I had grown up again, in the 1970s. So, those are all parts of me.
When you wrote this, how long did it take you to write this book?
It took about 4 years, except that this obsession with the songs of the book and with the tradition of the mystic and the Sufi, I had been reading about it ever since I left Africa, because I wanted to find out where this tradition, which I had, was a very communal, small tradition, where it fitted in into the larger scheme of Indian culture and mysticism and philosophy, because in the 70s that was the rage. That was what India was known for. So it was in the air, and I also wanted to find out exactly how I belonged, or how I, in what manner was I an Indian. And we had a very strong Indian tradition in these songs that I grew up with. So I had been reading about that, and I took courses in Sanskrit, and I used all kinds of stuff. So it was there in me, and then at some point I thought, I want, this is the time to write a novel. I had an idea which didn't quite work, and then I shifted that idea, and finally this is where it ended up.
How much of the 4 years did you spend actually on research? Because it seemed to me there was a great deal of research that you had to do.
But the research, I think most of it, because I read a lot of this kind of stuff. I've read collected books over the years. So I knew a lot of stuff. The research that I had to do was very little things. I had to ask people who lived in India now. Little things like, when did the auto rickshaw come into use, as opposed to a bicycle rickshaw? Or I had to look up a little bit on the Indo-Chinese War. So that was the research, but it was not much. Or asking, because some of the things that I put into the novel would also come about through my travels in India, which, as I said, I began in 1993. So independently of the book, before I started writing the book, I had been visiting these shrines, because that was my connection to India. You know, I would go to visit a graveyard where was buried a person whose songs I might have sung as a child. So, you know, that kind of connections I had made. So in the 4 years, I think the research part was there, but not huge. It was the writing, you know, trying to bring, give a form to the book, which had three layers in it. And there was always a fear that would those layers fit. But I had to put all three of them there.
And in terms of, do you write every day, or how does that work? How do you live for those 4 years that you're writing this book? Do you work on other things at the same time?
No, I do a small, I teach creative writing at Humber College, but it's a correspondence course, so it's kind of easy on me, and I do it at my own pace. And it doesn't take up much time. But I don't do anything else. My wife runs a small press, so I help her, obviously. But that's, I write every day, or read.
And I'm assuming, because of your previous career, that you're fairly disciplined at writing, that you would write from a certain time to a certain time?
No, I'm driven, so I write, you know, I just write, and if I'm not writing, then I'm editing my own work, or reading up, or just looking at my stuff, but I have to be close to it, as close to it as possible. But when I finish a book, then I'm sort of somewhere in limbo, and then usually what I do is start a story or something else.
And you enjoy it still?
Yeah, but it's not enjoyment as much as an obsession. You know, it's something that, you know, it's...
That you have to do?
That I have to do. It gives me satisfaction, is what I say. It sort of allows me to live, in a manner of speaking. And I feel good, but enjoyment is not the word I would use.
How do you react to prizes? Your book has just been long listed for the Giller. I'm assuming that you don't write for critical validation, but how does knowing that your books are well received critically, how does that play into how you write, let's say, the next book?
Well, I try not to think about it, and usually I don't. Because at this age, you know, at this time in my career, a prize is a good thing in terms of a little bit of money, or in terms of giving you credibility as a writer, as far as the publishers are concerned, you know, they pay more attention to your work. But at this stage, writing is just to write something that's wonderful, you know, that I hope will last. I think that is the only thing. It has to be good and honest. So it's a very vain thing also, you know, basically you're thinking about how will your work be received when you're dead, but you know, something like that, something that you think will last, but not. A prize is a temporary thing. It's comforting, and it helps you, but you don't write for that. If you wrote for that, you know, it's suicide.
But it does help in the sense that like this book perhaps was an easier buy for a publisher because you have a pretty good track record thus far.
Yeah, I think that's a big advantage of a prize, that it does give you, you know, you have some credit that you can bank on. And the publishers in Canada actually are nice, but they're not brutal. They stick with you.
Do you hear from many readers of your book, or of your books?
Not many, but you know, I do hear from them, and I never know how to respond to them, because you know, when they say they were deeply moved by the book, or I just don't know what to say. So I basically remain silent. But when I meet them, then of course I show my appreciation that they actually were kind enough to say what they did.
You're on a book tour at the moment. Do you write while on book tour?
Yeah, I do. I bring a computer and I do a little bit of writing, and I also bring some reading stuff. At present, I'm writing a memoir of my travels in India, and that's what I was doing when you called.
And this book of memoirs, that's the next book, I guess?
Yeah, it's almost done, because I started it immediately after my first trip to India, but I never knew how to put it together, what voice to use, what angle to use, because I didn't want to write as an outsider, showing how wonderful and exotic India was, and I just can't do that. And that's not how I responded to the place. So to find the right approach was a bit of a problem. So I just let it ride, and I visited India many times and took notes all the time. You know, I keep a journal regularly, so I have quite a few of them. And finally, I think a couple of years ago, I thought I'd found the right voice and approach to the book.
Mr. Vasanji, I do appreciate your time today to talk to us about this book, and I would say good luck with it, but it's already a bestseller, but good luck nonetheless, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
The book is called The Assassin's Song, $34.95 from Doubleday. The author is M.G. Vasanji. This is thecommentary.ca. I'm Joseph Plata.